Let's return to positive living with Patricia Raskin on TalkZone.com.
Well, hello, everyone. We are back. You're listening to Positive Living, and I'm Patricia Raskin right here on TalkZone.com. And you can give us a call if you're listening live on January 5th, which is Monday, between 12 and 1 p.m. Eastern and 9 and 10 a.m. Pacific. You can call us at 888-GO-FOR-IT. That's 888-GO-FOR-IT. We'd certainly love to hear from you. And the call letters are 888-463-6748. Today we are talking about high-altitude leadership, which is the title of the book, What the World's Most Forbidding Peaks Teach Us About Success. And we're really talking about how the two things are in common. How do we look at being a high-altitude leader, whether we're on the peak or whether we're in business? And how climbing Mount Everest and running a successful business have a lot in common, because one misstep can yield deadly results. And my guest today is the co-author of the book. His name is Don Schmucka, and Don is a dynamic keynote speaker, and he went from CNN to the Wall Street Journal, USA Today, and other national media. He uses anthropology and evolutionary genetics to remedy the high failure rates of management theories. And because of that, he really is a world consultant, world-renowned consultant, and renegade and leading global authority. Over 7,500 CEOs have come to his work and found it refreshingly irreverent, but also revolutionary for the bottom line. Welcome back, Don. Okay, we've been talking about the eight dangers that can hinder success. You talked about fear, and then you talked about saga, but saga is something that we need, correct?
Seem to come out high in our mountaineering research, but in corporations where we've applied this, we've been testing sagas now for about 15 years. And in each case, we have seen a profit impact and a performance impact on the company.
Mm-hmm. So, what's another one besides saga? What's next?
Another what?
Another one. Another danger. Then a step or a technique that takes us to the next step.
Yeah, the tool seduction one is when we left off. That it is a good segue, because a lot of people use mission statements and vision statements as a tool. We found that tool seduction tends to cripple a lot of organizations and a lot of teams and sometimes a lot of careers. So people try to take their career personally to a new level. Sometimes we get too seduced by the tools that are being offered there. And we see this a lot on mountains where climbers are taking up the best equipment, but they don't have the experience and they're too overconfident and end up losing their lives. But as we see a lot of tools being seducing companies as well, and these could look like the latest, greatest fashion trend in management. It could be anything from, like a quality program, some other change initiative, some sort of organizational development program, Six Sigma reengineering. I mean, you go through the history, you begin to see that when the academic studies are done at various universities on the results of these programs, the failure rates are extremely, extremely high. And for some reason, this never really makes it out to the press. But as a scientist, I was curious as to, with such high failure rates, why no one was really studying, the carcasses and the autopsies of these situations. And we found out, we did that similar to mountaineering.
So the moral of that story is, don't be seduced by fancy tools unless you really understand them and know how to use them.
Yeah, I mean, it sounds simple, but we walk into places and it's amazing how they get tied up on all these things. And so unhooking that is really important, and focusing on behavior and adaptation and so in the book High Altitude Leadership, we go into that. We use a lot of examples from companies we've worked with in the field, so people can get like real live data on how this plays out.
All right. Give us an example, if you would. Give us a concrete example of how this would play out in a company, and then move us to the next technique as well.
What caught my eye first was when we. The top quality award in the world is probably the Deming Award, and the first non-Japanese company that won that award was Florida Power and Light. And for some reason, after they brought the award back to the United States, they ended up spending hundreds of millions of dollars dismantling the entire system as a cumbersome bureaucracy. Then I started doing more research and found out that the Baldrige Award winners, which is the top quality award of the United States, a significant number of them were going bankrupt after winning the award. And so I thought that was interesting. And so we began to look more into it. And, of course, people were going into quality systems without thinking about what it was they were trying to do to enhance their competitive advantage. And they got so seduced by the tools that they took their eye off the ball.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Today, Hershey Corporation, I saw some news on the web the other day where they're looking at selling to Nestle. And as I began probing into the data there, it looked like they got distracted by their new ERM management system that they were trying to implement.
Mm-hmm. All right, let's move to another strategy. We talked about arrogance. You have arrogance in your book.
Yes.
Let's talk about arrogance.
Well, it's funny. I've been getting a lot of calls about this one because of what's going on in Detroit right now. And I think the American people has seen quite a display of the culture driving some of the largest automobile manufacturers in the U.S. And the word arrogance keeps coming up a lot. I keep hearing it a lot from people saying, how arrogant can these guys be? I did a speech tour in Detroit, did about 7 speeches to groups of CEOs in the area. A lot of them were suppliers to the automobile companies, and they all came up with that one point that over the years of working with GM and the others, they just sensed an arrogance that eventually caused the demise of these companies. I mean, they're not over yet because the government's giving them a handout, but the thing is that or a loan or whatever we're calling it, but we don't know where all that money's going to go and how much is it going to transform a culture of arrogance? Mm-hmm. But you see that.
Well, arrogance. You can look at arrogance in any situation, not just in business.
Oh, yeah.
It's what we think we know. What is that? It's what we think we know that we don't know.
Right.
Yeah. I want to read something from your book now. I'm skipping a little bit, but I am because this really caught me. Mm. One of your dangers, danger number 7, is comfort. And I want to read this because it speaks to me. It says, take just one more step. And it says here, but what about the lack of confidence when people hit the wall? Don't they need confidence to keep going? The answers are sometimes counterintuitive. And what you basically say is success requires perseverance in the face of continued obstacles or failures, even if one's confidence fails. Just as mountain climbers exert superhuman effort to save life and limb, even when they feel worthless in the face of seemingly insurmountable obstacles, high-altitude leaders also persevere through the most difficult business circumstances. I think that's profound.
Well, thank you. It was one of the things that we were struggling with is to because, we do see that people do get too comfortable, and a lot of times, especially now during recessionary periods, everybody's got the nice, coming back to your earlier questions on the compelling saga, they have these great mission statements on the wall, but a lot of them are touchy-feely, a lot of good rah-rah stuff. They got the banners hanging up, but as soon as the going gets tough, everybody starts either freezing up or they turn and run, or they get depressed, or but they don't realize that, the great leadership has a way to avoid that danger of comfort and really survive it by teaching perseverance. And the companies that survive this will persevere and instill that in their culture. That's why I thought sagas kind of captured the element better. Mm-hmm. It's like the Greek journeys. It's like the Iliad or the Odyssey.
Yeah.
It's like, it's not all fun. I mean, there's pain, there's joy, and when we have companies that are willing to endure these types of expeditions, they tend to survive and profit better than others.
Mm-hmm. Now, we just talked about comfort. I'm skipping around a little, Don, so please excuse me, and we have just a couple minutes to break. But there's another danger, and it's also being a coward. So on one hand, it's being too comfortable. On the other hand, it's being a coward, meaning that you say it's too hard and you give up too soon? Is that what you mean?
Yeah, it's it could be give up too soon, or you don't take any initiative at all.
Okay.
You're too afraid. A lot of this came out of our early samurai research, which my first book called The Code of the Executive that I mentioned earlier, written back in the 90s, that was based on an ancient samurai training program. And in that book, The Code of the Executive, this issue of bravery was actually a very fundamental element. We began to see it on the mountain as well. So when we got into high-altitude leadership studies, we were seeing that, cowardice can affect a team at altitude as well as a company. How many times do people not say things inside of meetings that they will talk about after the mm-hmm. meeting is over, but they're too afraid to voice the truth, or they're too afraid to hold each other accountable.
That does take courage. The opposite of cowardice, that does take courage.
Yeah.
All right, we're going to take a break, and when we come back, we have a few more to talk about. Lone heroism is a very interesting danger. We haven't discussed that yet. We're going to talk about gravity, which is interesting. So all of these are mysterious and interesting. My guest is Don Schminka. He's the co-author of the book High Altitude Leadership with the World's Most Forbidding Peaks. Teach us about success. You're listening to Positive Living. I'm Patricia Raskin. Remember, folks, that you can write to me, patricia@patriciaraskin.com. I have 3 radio programs. And you can also read my blog, and I have a newsletter, and I would love to hear from you. So, again, stay tuned. You're listening to Positive Living. I'm Patricia Raskin. We'll be right back.